And we're holding on Memches Amud Beis, 10 lines from the bottom. We talked about in the Mishnah about the fact that you can have the kala. There can be a certain stage of nisuin even before. Now, like this, of course, you have the kedushin. Meanwhile, after the kedushin, she's still living at home in her parents' house. Eventually, there's nisuin. She goes to live with her husband. There can be where she's going together with the shluchim of the husband, where there can be a certain point at that. We said once she's going with those shluchim exclusively and the father or his shluchim are not along with her, where there at that point she's considered to a certain extent already fully married, even though she hasn't yet actually gotten to where her husband is and they haven't had the actual chuppah. Tana, we learn it. By the way, what the definition of chuppah is, we've talked about earlier in the Masechta. In particular, it comes up in this connection where the Gemara is going to be talking about where she was in, where she had gone into the chuppah, but there hadn't yet been be'ila, they hadn't yet had relations. And so this is one of the places where the Rishonim discuss what exactly the definition of chuppah is. The Rambam and a number of other Rishonim, for example, say that the chuppah is the yichud room. However, the Ran points out that that's a little hard to make fit with our Gemara over here, where we're going to talk about that and other places in our Masechta that talk about that. It's not necessarily, of course, that Be'ilah has to take place in the Yichud room. It doesn't always. But the point is, how is there any possibility of considering her Besula after that, where they could have had relations during that time? So we talked about before that there are different other definitions that the Rishonim have of what Nichnas al-Chuppah is. Among them, one explanation is, in fact, we had at the beginning of the second parak, we talked about the veil that the kala wears, the hinuma, it's called. So there's a possibility. So one possibility is that yichud may be that when the chassan puts the veil on her, the badek. And then there's a couple of other definitions as well. Anyway, so the Gemara says Tana, we learn in a brisa. Masa av l'shluchei abal v'zinsa. Suppose that now we talked about yesterday. Then we had a machlokes between several amiroim. Once she's given to the shluchei abal, and they're going to be escorting her the rest of the way until where the chasen is. What does that make as far as in what sense at that point is she in the reshus of the husband? So we said it can be for many different purposes, except that if she's marrying a kohen, she can't yet eat truma. We said maybe even truma. We said maybe as far as that he can yaushin her. Maybe as far as that at that point, if she were widowed or divorced, her ksuba would go down to 100. Now, another thing we know, there's a difference between a non-nesua and a nesua. We know there's the difference if she's mizana at that point, what the misa is. If she's a, we're talking about still where she's a naira over here. We're talking about she's not yet a begeras. So if she's a naira bistula ma'irosa and she's mizana, then she gets skila. On the other hand, if she's not a naira anymore, or what's relevant for our Gemara over here, if she's already a nesua, even though she's still physically a bistula, but already nisuin of some form has taken place, then already her, if she's mizana at that point, then the misa would get downgraded to chenek. So now we're going to talk about that. Tana, we learn in a brisa, Masa av the shluchei abal. If the father gave her to the shluchim of the husband, who are going to escort her the rest of the way, and he's not going along, the zinsa, then at that point, if she's mezane, during that time, harezu b'chenek, then she gets chenek. So even though they haven't yet had the full nisurin and she hasn't been together with her husband, nevertheless, already it gets downgraded to chenek as if she's a nisua. So the Gemara says, Minohani Mili, where do we know that from? And the answer is Omar Abi Bachama, Omakra, because the Pasuk says that when the Pasuk talks about the skill about the Naira Ma'irasa getting skila, the expression is Liznos Beis Aviya, that she did wrong to be Mizana in her father's house. So what is that phrase adding? What is this Beis Aviya adding? Prat Lashamasa Av Lashloch Abal, that comes to exclude the case where the father had given her to the shluchim of the husband. So the Gemara says, why? How do you know it means that? Maybe it means, so later on, you get to the stage where she does meet her chosen, and they have the chuppah, however we define the chuppah, whether it means the yichud room, whether it means the badekin, whether another possibility that Rishonim bring is it means what we think of as the chuppah, whatever, the four poles and the canopy. Anyway, so how do we know? Maybe the pasuk is implying that once they have that, even before Nivala, then she's already considered an Asua, and therefore it goes from Skiva to Chenek. But maybe when she's with the husband's Shluchim, that we're not yet at that stage, maybe she's still getting Skiva. Omar Rava, so Rava answers, can't be. Omar Li Ami, the Pashtus, the same Rabbi Ami Bachoma, said to me, no, because Chuppah behed Yaksiva. Because as far as Chuppah, you have a different pasuk that says it explicitly. Well, not explicitly. It doesn't say the word chuppah in the pasuk, but in other words, we can easily derive from the pasuk that there's a separate thing that it talks about that once there's chuppah, then she's considered an asua for this purpose. And therefore, if we have another phrase in the pasuk, lizner space avia, then it must mean something else. Namely, the pasuk begins, ki yeh naira b'sula ma'irasala ish, that if she's a naira and she's a b'sula and she's ma'ureses to a man, and the brisa, and we know we have a brisa that says naira v'loy begeres. Each of those is meant as a mute, as opposed to something else. She's a naira, but meaning not if she's a begeres. If she's a begeres, then she's not getting skila, but rather fennec. Besula v'loy ba'ula. The same thing. Besula means only if she's a besula, not if she's a ba'ula. And ma'irasa v'loy nesua. The third one, ma'irasa, means as opposed to if she's nesua. If any of those are true, if she's a begeris, or she's a be'ula, or she's a nesua, then she's getting chenek rather than skila. Now, says Rabba, my nesua. So you have to ask, what does the word nesua mean? What would be the miut from ma'irasa that we're saying nesua? Ilema nesua mamash, do you mean the regular definition of nesua, meaning that there had been chuppa and be'ila? Hainu besula. Then that's exactly the same thing as the previous mute. Once we're saying that the rule of skila applies only if she's a besula, not a ba'ula, automatically, therefore, so okay, if there was nichnas of a chuppa, the nivala, then she's not a besula anymore, period. Ela lav she nichnas of a chuppa v'la nivala. Evidently, then, the mute from ma'irasa v'la nesua must be telling us about where there was chuppa, but not yet be'ila. So physically, she's still a basula. Nevertheless, the chuppah has already taken place, and therefore the pasuk is memayit and saying that she doesn't get skila anymore. So now, if we have the other phrase in the pasuk, lizner space avia, then it can't mean to exclude the case of chuppah because we already have that excluded by the word ma'irasa. Therefore, of necessity, it must be talking about this case of shluchei habaal. And that shows, therefore, that bears out what the Braisa is saying, that in that case already she's only getting chenek. So in other words, so it's not only if nichnas, so first, if nichnas of a chuppah of a nivala, no question about it, she's getting chenek rather than skila. Even if it was nichnas of a chuppah, but there wasn't yet be'ila, same thing. And now the Braisa is saying, even if there was neither of the above, but there was already masar av, shluchei habaal, she's already traveling with the shluchim of the husband, and she's already out of her father's rishus, in that neither her father nor any of his shluchim are still accompanying them, then at that point she gets downgraded to chenek instead of skila, if she's mezana at that point. So the Gemara asks, now according to Rashi, this next question is not really going to be a continuation of the previous discussion. It's still on the same topic, but the Gemara is going to be asking sort of a side thing. So the Ema, so maybe you should say, Heicha da Hadril, Veinosha Hadril Milsa Kamaisa. Maybe though, based on all of this, you should say, now like this, let's refer back to the Mishnah. We said in the Mishnah that once she's going with the Shluchei HaBaal and the Shluchei HaAh and the father of his Shluchim are not with her anymore, at that point she's out of the Rishus of her father and is in the Rishus of her husband. So now the question is, Ve'ema, maybe we should say, Heicha da Hadra l'vein Nosha, if eventually she returns to her father's house, Hadra l'milsa kamaisa, then maybe she should go back to the original status. Meaning, So like this, the Mishnah had said that once she's given to Shluchei HaBaal, then that's it. She's in the Rishus of the Baal, implying no matter what happens afterwards, she's already out of the Rishus of the father. So now the question is, if we're saying that we're learning only from the words Beis Aviya, then maybe if she is back in Beis Aviya, so let's say, so she went with Shluchei HaBaal, then something happened on the way, her husband divorced her, or her chosin, that is, they haven't yet done the nisuin, but anyway, her chosin divorced her or died or whatever, so she's returning back home. Maybe we should say in that case, then she resumes the status of being an arusa in her father's house. So it should. So in particular, if she's mezana at that point, then it should be skila rather than chen. And all Mishnah doesn't seem to be implying that. So why not? So in other words, the question is not, according to Rashi, a continuation of how do we know what the din of Braisa was saying, but rather it's a more general question. How do we know that after she's gone with Shluchei HaBaal, then it's irrevocable and the fact that later on she gets divorced or widowed doesn't change things, even though she's returning to live at home? Tosfos discusses, and so do several other Rishonim, that maybe it is a continuation of the question. That we just said we know Moser Av the Shluchei HaBaal because we have an extra phrase in the Pasuk, Lizner's Beis Aviya. But maybe you could say that, so the question the Gemara is asking, according to Tosfos, is that maybe both that and the miut from the word ma'urasa are both talking about nichnas al-chuppah. And the point would be, if you only had one of them, then you wouldn't know that the same din applies if before the chuppah, after the masir of the Shluchei HaBaal, she was widowed or divorced. So maybe you need both psukim, just both to teach us about the same thing, that even though nichnas alachupa v'la nivala, but not anything about, but, and the point is that if nichnas alachupa, then if her husband dies or divorces her, then she goes back to be, then that we would say she doesn't go back to her original status. She remains considered a nesua, and the misa, if she's mezana, would be chenet. But the point is, we'd need both of them in order that you shouldn't mistakenly think that if she returns back home having been widowed or divorced, then it's different. So according to that, both of those psukim would be needed for that, and you wouldn't have anything left for Shluchei HaBaal. So how do you know not? And the answer is, Amar Rava, Hahu Kva Poska Tanad Ve Rabbi Shmuel. The answer is, you already have a clear braisa from the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel to say that that's not the case. Once she was given to the, once she was given to the Shluchei HaBaal, who are going to accompany her, at that point, then it's irrevocable. She remains in that status as a nesua forever, and she never goes back to being a naira ma'irasa. We know that from Tanad Ve Rabbi Shmuel. Therefore, so according to Rashi, that answers the question. There's no way of going back. And according to Tosfos, the point is that once we have that, then we know that fact already. Therefore, we don't need two psukim about nichnas al-chuppah v'la nivala, and therefore one of them is telling us the underlying idea that once she's given to Shluchei HaBaal, then she's considered a nesua. So in other words, according to Tosfos, we'd have three psukim, one teaching us about, well, according to everybody, we have three psukim, but the idea is, in other words, one would be telling us that mesira to the Shluchei HaBaal is effective. Another one would be telling us, which is what we're going to learn now from Tanad Ve Rabbi Shmuel, that that is irrevocable. And once that's done, then she's in the Nesua and never goes back to being a Naira Ma'irasa. And the third one would be telling us that, from the word Ma'irasa, that if there's no Mesira to the Shluchei HaBaal in the first place, if there's no Shluchim involved, then she's considered a Nesua once she goes into the Chuppah. So what is Tanad Ve Rabbi Shmuel? The Tanad Ve Rabbi Shmuel, the Pasuk says, in connection with Hafaras Nedarim, in connection with, you have the whole part in Parshas Matos, where a father and afterwards a husband can be mefer, can cancel the wife's Nedarim. The Pasuk says, V'neder almono grusha, the neder of a widow or a divorcee, koyla she'osra al-nafsha, yokum aleha, whatever she asked on herself will remain standing on her, meaning it's going to be a valid neder, and there's no one who can revoke it for her. She can go to Beis Din and be matter neder, of course, but it's not the psukim are not dealing with that. Psukim are dealing with if anybody has the right to veto her neder, and the answer is that at this point, no. Now says Tanad Ve Rabbi Shmuel, Matam Adloimar. What does the pasuk need to tell us that for? Who is there available? At this point, when she's a widow or she's divorced, she's already out of the reshus of her father, so her father can't veto her neder. She's out of the reshus of her husband, so he can't either. So it's obvious that there's nobody that can be made for her neder. Why do we need a pasuk to tell us that? Ela, so says Tana Dred Rabbi Shmuel, the pasuk is coming to tell us like this. Suppose that the father had given her to the shluchim of the husband, who are going to accompany her to her chassan's hometown. Or we said yesterday, you can even have shluchim of the father who are accompanying her, and then on the way they meet up with the shluchim of the husband, and they transfer her to them. Now, the nis'am l'baderach niskarsha. Now on the road, she gets widowed or she gets divorced. So now the question would be, what do we consider? In what status do we consider her right now? Base avia shozu, a base baila shozu. Do we consider, is she still considered to be in her father's house, or is she considered to be in her husband's house? If we said she's in her father's house, means that her father would have the ability to cancel her neder, if she makes any nedarim at that point. If we consider her to be in her husband's house, then what would it be? Her husband is already, the point is, Rashi says, in other words, like this. Suppose that she had gotten widowed from the Erusin. Suppose there had been Erusin, then during that year or whatever it is that there usually is between the Erusin and the Nisuin, she had been widowed or divorced. And then the din is, if she's still at Naira, then she goes back home and she returns to her original status in the sense that her father now has the ability again to be made for her Nedarim. So what happens is that originally living at home, her father had the ability, before the Erusin, her father had the exclusive rights to cancel her Nedarim. Now, as an arusa, it's the father and the chosin together that have that right. Now, if her chosin passes away or divorces her during the erusin, then it goes back to the father. So now, what we're saying is that in this case over here, when she was given over to shluchei habaal, then that's different. So now the posik is without the posik, we wouldn't know, is she still considered to be in her father's house at this point, and her father regains the exclusive right to cancel her nedarim, or is she in her husband's house and therefore her husband would have that right, except that her husband isn't her husband anymore because he died or divorced her. So therefore, the pasuk is telling you that she's neither. She's not back in her father's house in terms of hafaras nedarim, and she's not in, and her chosin is out of the picture. So kivin she yotza sha'achas mirshus ahav, once she's been even for a short time out of her father's house, meaning from her father's reshus rather, because she's together with the chosin's shluchim, shuveni yachal lahafer. Then the father can no longer be made for his daughter's nedarim. So therefore, we see clearly from that braisa that once she was given to shluchei habaal and they were going to be accompanying her, then at that point she's forever out of the reshus of her father. And even if at that point she's widowed or divorced, then she's not going back to that reshus. Therefore, that automatically tells us that in that case also, if she's mizana at that point, then it would be chenek rather than skila. And it tells us, in other words, that this whole thing is irrevocable, as we were saying at the top of the Amud, even if she does return to her father's house, she may physically be there, but she's not considered to be in his reshus anymore. This is all before chuppah, right? This is after mesira l'shluchei habaal, exactly. So therefore, so Rava says, so we already know from that braisa that it's that once she's given the shluchei habaal, then that's irrevocable. Therefore, we don't need that. Therefore, according to Rashi, we started with an independent question. The Mishnah tells us once she's given the shluchei habaal, then that's it. How does the Mishnah know? And Rava says that's why. That's how we know. According to Tosfos, the question is. According to Tosfos, the question and the answer was, how do we know that the two psukim we said before of Liznos Beis Avia and Ma'orasa, one is talking about Shluchei Abal and the other one is talking about Chuppah, maybe both of them are needed to tell us about Chuppah in order that we shouldn't misunderstand. And Rava says, no, once we have Tanad Veda Bishmol that tells us that Shluchei Abal is irrevocable, then we already know that the other two Pesukim are talking, one tells us the basic concept that Shluchei Abal changes anything anyway and makes it that her misa is not skila anymore, but chenek, and the other one, therefore, is available to teach us about Chuppah where there were no Shluchei Abal. So in short, again, she goes in, one second. So again, in short, well, give me one second. Let me just finish the thought over here. So therefore, the point is that the bottom line is what the Raisa was saying. Whether she goes into the chuppah, whether there's no Shluchei Abal, she and her chassan are in the same city. Once she goes into the chuppah, even before Be'ila, then she's considered an asua. And furthermore, not only chuppah, but even if there was Mesir, the Shluchei Abal, then at that point, it's also considered that she's in the Nesua. What were you going to say?
What happens when she's taken by the Shluchei Abal and then they get killed?
They get killed, so then it doesn't matter. I mean, once she was given to the Shluchei Abal, the point is that at this point, she's in the Nesua. If they get killed on the way, she's going to be in great danger, but I guess either she continues going on or she returns back home. But the point is, it doesn't matter. At that point, we're saying it doesn't matter where she's physically located after that. She's considered an asua at that point, and at that point, then her missa is no longer skila. It's chenek if she were to be mezana. And we talked about yesterday the various other things, what would and wouldn't apply yet in terms of the usual things that take effect after nisuin. Which ones of those would and wouldn't take effect yet? We had the different opinions of the amiroyim that we discussed yesterday. But the fact that the Shluchei Abal are no longer alive is neither here nor there. Either practically speaking, she'll have to decide for herself, can I continue the journey on my own and meet my chosen, or should I better go back home and wait for somebody else to come and accompany me? Okay, so the Gemara says, Amar Papa. So the Papa says, we had the Braisa that we started today's daf with at the bottom of Memches Amud Beis. So we showed how the Braisa knows the din. Amar Papa afanan nami tanena. So the Papa says, in fact, you can show that this Braisa is correct lahalacha because we find a Mishnah that expresses the same thing. The Mishnah says in Sanhedrin, habam naira mayrasa. If a man is mizana with a naira mayrasa, then he and she, if it was willingly, are not chayev skila agite naira besula mayrasa v'hi bevei savia, unless all four things are true. She's a naira, a besula mayrasa, and she's in her father's house. So now let's figure, what is the Mishnah excluding with each of these phrases? Bishlema naira means v'loy begeres. The word naira comes to exclude if she's a begeres, where then it's chenek rather than skila. Besula v'loy beula, same thing. Mayrasa v'loy nesua. But we have to ask, what would the fourth expression in the mission of Bevesa Via be coming to exclude? Presumably, it would have to be excluding the case where the father gave her to the shluchim of the husband. And the point is, so even though everything else is still true, she is still a naira, she is still a basula, she is only ma'irosa because they haven't had the chuppah yet. Nevertheless, she's already not in Bevesa Via because she's been given to the shluchim abal and the father and his shluchim are no longer with her. And the Mishnah is implying by that already at that point, she's only getting chenek rather than skila. So the fact that the Mishnah says that supports what the Braisa was saying and shows that what the Braisa is saying is correct and is accepted lahalacha. Amr of Nachman Yitzchok afanan nami tanena. And Rav Nachman Yitzchok says, we have another Mishnah also in Sanhedrin that bears this out. The Mishnah that Rapapa brought was in connection with Skila. And then we have another Mishnah later on in Sanhedrin that talks about who's Chayiv Chenek. And it says, Abo'al Ishasish, a man is Mizana with a married woman. And that means an Eishas Ish, once she entered the Rishus of her husband as far as marriage, even though they haven't yet had relations, so if anybody has relations, anybody else other than her husband has relations with her, then he gets chenek. So the Mishnah is more clearly saying that she just went into the Rishus of the husband. It didn't say nichnas alachupa. Therefore, shmamina, that also shows that we're talking about Shluchei Abal, and once she's with Shluchei Abal, she's considered to be in the Rishus of the husband, even though the Chuppah has not taken place yet. Okay, so all of that shows that what the Braisa had said is correct and is accepted by halacha. So now we talked about in the previous Mishnah, we said that what the father gets from his daughter, and we talked about what the father gets from his daughter. We said he's entitled while she's a tana or a naira to her kedushin, to control over her kedushin and to the money of it. He gets her mitzia and her maisia deha and so forth. So our Mishnah continues. Ha'av eini chayev b'mizonis bito. While the father is alive, he's not obligated to support his daughter. She can support herself. So once he passes away, then it's one of the tnoi ksuba, which we'll discuss later on in the Masechta, that the daughters will be supported until they get married. It's derabanan, like most of the tnoi ksuba, right? But while he's alive, that takana is not yet in effect. And therefore, he's not obligated to support her. One thing is, the Pnei Yeshua does point out. Now, in the previous Mishnah, we said that the father is entitled to Maisiyah. So sit below six and above six, we're going to talk about in the Gemara. But we'll see what age we're talking about over here. But at one point, the Pnei Yeshua makes a point. You know, we learned in the previous Mishnah, the father is entitled to the Maisiyah Deha of his daughter. Now, he says, if the father is going to keep her Maisiyah Deha, no question he has to support her. I mean, even for example, a person is able to say, the halacha is a person can say to his eved knani, asei mi ve'eni zanach, but he certainly can't say that to an eved ivri. He can't say, you have to work for me, but I'm not obligated to support you. So the same thing over here. I mean, there's no way the father has the ability to say, you have to give me your maisiyah deha, and I'm not going to support you in return. If he's taking her maisiyah deha, he's obligated to support her. What we're saying is that if he doesn't want to take her maisiyah deha, or let's say she doesn't have any maisiyah deha, then he's not technically obligated to support her. So why is that? Zem medresh darash Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah l'fnei chachamim b'kerem b'yavne. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said this drosha in front of the Chachamim in the Kerem B'Yavne. Kerem B'Yavne is the yeshiva over there in Yavne. We know after the Churban, you have Rabbi Yechiman Zakkai says to Aspas Yonus shortly before the Churban, actually, whatever, ten li Yavne v'chachameha, let me reestablish the Sanhedrin and the yeshiva in Yavne. And he was granted permission, and they remained there for some years. So during that time, when they were in Yavne, as we know happened, the whole story with Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah being appointed as the new Nasi to replace Rabbi Gamliel. So Rashi says, this is on the day that they appointed him Nasi, he gave the following Jerusha. Why is it called Kerem B'Yavne? So Rashi says, because they were sitting, the Chachamim were sitting in rows like the vines in a vineyard. The Rambam brings that reason in Pirush HaMishnayos and brings another reason as well. In general, in many places in Tanakh, the Jewish people are compared to a vineyard, and the Chachamim, who are the representatives of all the Jewish people, therefore can also be called a vineyard. Anyway, so he gave the following Jerusha. We said in the Ksuba, we have two phrases. Habonim Yushu v'habonis Yizonu. The boys are going to Yaushin, and the girls are going to get Mizonis. Now, the Yaushining, what we're talking about primarily, is what we're going to learn later on in this perek about the concept of Ksubas Benin Dichrin. The Chachamim made a takana that like this. So the woman is entitled to a ksuba, 200 if she was a basula when she got married, 100 otherwise. Now, if her husband dies before her or divorces her, then she collects that ksuba, fine. What happens if she dies first? So the Chachamim made a takana called Ksubas Benin Dichrin, that her boy, the boys that she has with him, are going to yaushin that ksuba, and then they split up the rest of the estate. In other words, imagine that the guy had two wives. Imagine the guy had two wives and one of them passed away while he was alive. Then the children, the sons of that wife, are going to yaushin an amount equal to their mother's ksuba, and then the rest of the estate they split with their half-brothers. So we'll learn about the details of that later on in our perek. But anyway, the point is that you have these two takonas, the takona of ksubas benin dichrin and another tnai ksuba, which is that the daughters are to be supported until they get married. Or until they become a begeres, or until they become man. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, the fact that those two things are in the ksuba back to back teaches us that there's a similarity. When do the sons inherit the ksubas benin dichrin? Only after the father dies. So in other words, their mother died. It doesn't mean that right at that moment they yaushin their mother's ksuba. It means that it's pending. Eventually, when their father dies and it comes time to split up the estate, they have earmarked for them first the amount that was going to be their mother's ksuba, and then the rest of it is split among all the yorshim. That's halacha. Yeah, we'll talk about that later on in the parak. Nowadays, we don't usually find that done, but we'll talk about it then when we get to it. Bez Hashem and Daf Nun Beis and Gimel, we'll deal with it. Anyway, so he says, Afa bonus and nizonis elavacham misavien. The same way, it's tnai ksuba that the daughters have to be supported only takes effect after the father dies. So when the father is alive, then he's not required to support them yet. So the Gemara starts off. The mizonis bito hu de'ene chayev. Now we're saying that he's not chayev in to support his daughters. Haba mizonis b'noi chayev. But the implication seems to be that the father is required to support his sons even while he's alive. And bito nami choyva hu deleka. And even as far as the daughters, it sounds like we're saying that he's not required to ha mitzvah ikka. It sounds like there would be a mitzvah, would be a good thing for him to do. So the question is, if we understand the Mishnah that way, mani masnisin, then who is the Mishnah going like? Loyd of Meir, Loyd of Yehuda, Loyd of Yechim ben Berotha. It doesn't seem to be like any of three Amiroyim who address this topic. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, mitzvah lozunas abonis kavachoyim elabonim de'aski batoyra divir Meir. Reb Meir says it's a mitzvah, meaning not a choyva, it's not an absolute obligation, but it is a mitzvah, it is something preferable for the father to support his daughters, and how much more so for the sons, since the sons learn Torah. Divir Reb Meir, so that's what Reb Meir says. So now, our Mishnah that's saying that he's not, that seems to be implying that he's required to support his sons and not required to support his daughters, that wouldn't fit according to Reb Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Omer mitzvah lozenus abonim v'kavu choymel avonus mishum zibulsa. Rabbi Yehuda says no, it's a mitzvah but not a choyva to support the sons, but how much more so the daughters because of zibulsa, because of the embarrassment that they would have to go around and beg for tzedakah. In fact, Mephoshim bring over here something that the Rishami says, that it's not just the humiliation of having to go and collect tzedakah, they might even go, the tirus ra, they might even decide, you know what, I have another way as a woman to make money, and we don't want that. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's no difference between the sons and the daughters. Both of them, it's a mitzvah, but not a choyva, whereas our Mishnah seems to be implying that it's a choyva to support the sons. And Rabbi Yechon ben Berakha, a choyva lozinus abonus la'acham misavien. Rabbi Yechon ben Berakha says it's a requirement that to support the daughters after their father dies because of the tanai ksuba. Ava b'chayi avien elu ve'elu einin nizonin. But during the lifetime of the father, neither one of them is entitled to mizonus, meaning even on the level of mitzvah. So now the question is, mani masnisin. So who would our Mishnah be following? If we're saying that our Mishnah seems to be implying that the sons he's required to support, but the daughters he's not. So I Reb Meir ha'om abonim mitzvah. Reb Meir says that it's a mitzvah, but not a choyva to support the sons. I Reb Yehuda ha'om abonim nami mitzvah. Reb Yehuda also says that he also says that supporting the boys is a mitzvah rather than a choyva. And I Reb Yechon ben Berakha after the mitzvah nami leka. And Reb Yechon ben Berakha would say it's not even a mitzvah. It's not even if he wants to on his own, then fine. But there's no particular inyan in him doing it. So our Mishnah doesn't seem to fit according to any of them. And the answer is Ibois Emer Reb Meir, Ibois Emer Reb Yehuda, Ibois Emer Reb Yechon ben Berakha. The answer is on the contrary. Our Mishnah could go according to any of the three of them. Ibois Emer Reb Meir. First, you can say that our Mishnah goes like Reb Meir, but Hachikamar. So Reb Meir is saying like this: Ha'av ein chayev b'mizonis bitoy. The father is not chayev. In other words, Beis Din is not going to force him to support his daughter. V'hu adin l'bnoi. And the same thing would apply as far as his son, implying ha'mitzvah b'bitoy ikah. However, there's no chayva, but the implication is that there is a mitzvah to support his daughter, and Reb Meir goes on to say how much more so for sons since they learned Torah. In other words, the point is, Reb Meir is considering the sons more important than the daughters because the sons learned Torah. So if he had said the expression, Eine Chayev, b'mizonis b'noi, then you would think maybe he's not chayev in the sons, but there is a mitzvah, but for the daughters, maybe there's not even a mitzvah. So instead, he puts it in terms of Eine Chayev, the mizonis bitoy, to imply that there is a mitzvah, and then in that case, then the Kavach HaOmer tells us that the same thing for the sons. So that doesn't contradict our Mishnah. And that's what the Gemara continues. The fact that Reb Meir starts by mentioning his daughter, or the fact that our Mishnah says his daughter, the point of the Chiddush that is, after the bitoy, choybahu delekaha mitzvah ikah. Even when it comes to the daughter, where, after all, she's not Osik Batora, and therefore you should have less of an obligation, there's no choybah, but even with her, there is a mitzvah. So our Mishnah could work according to the mayor. Next, the boy same Rabbi Yehuda. You could also say that the Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Yehuda. V'hachikamar. So it's saying ha'av ene chayev b'mizonis bitoy v'chol shekin livnoi. So the father is not chayev to support his daughter. How much more so he's not chayev to support his son? Because after all, Rabbi Yehuda had not said this. Rabbi Yehuda had said the other way around. Rabbi Yehuda had taken the kavah chomer the other way around. Rabbi Meir had said that the sons in a way are more important because they learn Torah. Rabbi Yehuda had pointed out that in a way the daughters are more important because of Zilusa. So now, when our Mishnah is saying that he's not chayev in the mizonis of his daughter, how much more so he's not chayev in the mizonis of his sons, because after all, there's no Zilusa for them, or there's less Zilusa for them. So the implication is that there is a mitzvah to support the sons. But Rabbi Yehuda is not dealing with the matter of Yehuda is not dealing with the matter of learning or not, but he's saying there may not be a choiva for either one of them, but there is a mitzvah. And how much more so, since the daughter, so there is the daughters need it more than the sons because of Zilusa. So if we're saying that there's a mitzvah for the sons, how much more so that for the daughters there's a mitzvah, just not a choiva. So the reason why our Mishnah focuses on the daughter, then the point would be that even with the daughter, there's no choiva. So essentially, so far, it comes out that Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda are both saying the same thing. They're just coming at it from different angles. So some approach and talk about the nafka minna between them would be, let's say there's not enough money to support both the sons and the daughters. Which one takes precedence? Depends which one you consider more important versus less important. Another nafka minna would be, let's say the sons aren't learning Torah. Do they have any advantage over their sisters? If appointed a mayor, the whole reason for their advantage is because they learn Torah. Well, if they don't learn Torah, then maybe appointed a mayor, they don't have that advantage. Okay. And the boy same Rabbi Yochanan Breika. Another possibility is our Mishnah could work like Rabbi Yochanan Breika. So the Mishnah is saying, he's not chayev to support his daughter. The same thing applies to the son. And the Mishnah would be implying, according to Rabbi Yochanan Breika, really, it's not just that there's no choiva. Unlike with Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, where we said the Mishnah is saying he's not required to, implying that there is a mitzvah, would be a good thing for him too. And the point is, we're going to say further down on the Amud, if there's a mitzvah, for example, then Beis Din should convince him to do it. They may not be able to force him, but at least they should try to convince him to. If we say that there's choiva, it means they'd actually have to force him. And if according to Rabbi Yochanan Breika, there's not even a mitzvah, means they wouldn't even try to talk him into it. They would just leave. They would just leave well enough alone. So Rabbi Yochanan Breika is saying there's no mitzvah either. But Ivy, the bonus la'acha misses Rabbi and choiva. But just because after the father passes away, then he has a choiva. Then he has there's an absolute obligation on the estate for the daughters to be supported because that is one of the tnoik suba. Tonanami ain't chayev, so therefore the Mishnah begins by saying that he's not chayev while he's alive, not to imply he's not chayev, but it's at the level of mitzvah, but rather according to Rabbi Yochanan Breika, it's not even at the level of mitzvah. So according to him, as long as the father is alive, there's nothing at all, not a chiyuv and not even a mitzvah. But after the father dies, then you have tnoik suba requires that at that point the daughters be supported. So all of this is talking about, as we're now going to say in the Gemara, is when they're above 6 years old. So up to 6 years old, he does have to support them. Tosfos points out, we're going to have at the end of the next parak, we're going to discuss that, because kids up to six are generally with their mother. So the same way as he has to support the mother, then the supporting the child goes along with it. And that, by the way, applies even if they're divorced. Then also you have that concept. So here we're talking about in our Mishnah, we're talking about when they're above six. So now continues the Gemara. The Chachamim made a takana in the city of Usha. Now the Gemara tells us in Rosh Hashanah that in the decades after the Churban, after Churban Bayis Sheni, that is, the Sanhedrin moved from place to place. Even while the Beis Hamikdash was standing, they moved from Lishkas Hagozes to Chanuyos and from Chanuyos to Yerushalayim, because of the whole thing. The Gemara tells us that there were Rotzchim more prevalent, and the Chachamim figured we can't judge all of them, and therefore let's just move from Lishkas Hagozes in order that now we don't have to be Dan Din in Ephoshes anymore. But after the Churban, then the Gemara goes on to say they moved to Yavne, and then from Yavne they moved to Usha, and then for a while they moved back to Yavne and so forth, and it goes through the whole Seder over there, how over a period of 100 and some years, how they moved from one place to another.
After the whole Churban, they're still left somewhere else.
No. So after the Churban, there may or may not have been Rotzkin, but after the Churban, only when they're sitting in the Lishkas Hagozes can they judge Din in Nefashos. After the Churban, they can't sit in the Lishkas Hagozes anyway. But even during the last 40 years of the second Beis Hamikdash, because there were Rotzchim more and more common, then the Chachamim figured we can't get all of them. So therefore, let's better move, and that way we don't have to judge Dinei Nefashos at all. So Tosfos mentions in some places that maybe once in a while, on a temporary basis for an extreme case, they return to the Lishkas Hagozes and judge. But ordinarily, they figured we're going to have to leave it in the Eibush's hands. One thing is, I mean, you have to realize a lot of the Rotzim during that period were very politically connected. So practically speaking, if you tried to get them, then we'd be putting everybody in danger. Anyway, but after the Churban, the point is they can't sit in the Lishkas Hagozes anymore anyway. The Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. So then they were moving from place to place as different times when the Romans persecuted them and forced them out of one place, and they would move to another, and they'd be there quietly for a while, and eventually they'd have to move. So one of the places where they were, was a city in the Galil called Usha. Actually, the Gemara there in Rosh Hashanah mentions they were there twice. They went to Yavne after the Churban. Then they moved at one point to Usha. Then they moved back to Yavne and then back to Usha. A Doris Rishonim, a Sefer on Jewish history, explains basically that the Romans didn't particularly like the idea of them being in Yavne. Okay, Aspasianus had given permission, but eventually the Romans realized that the Romans started not liking the idea, and therefore they persecuted them and forced them out of there. So if they're in the Galil, it's further away from Yerushalayim, they figured that's less of an issue. So the Chachamim could find some respite over there. Eventually then, when things got better, then they moved back to Yavne, and then when things got worse, then they had to move to Usha. Anyway, so when the Sanhedrin was in Usha, they made the following takon. A man is required to support his children, his sons and his daughters, when they're little, meaning Rashi says until they develop shtei sires. So even past the age of six. So till now, we've been talking about that he's required to up to six. Now we're saying takonas Usha is he's required to support them at an age above that as well. Till they're 12 or 13, yeah, then they can go get a job, yeah. So Iboyelahu, I saw, by the way, somebody says a vote on this, that it was also meant as like a pointed hint to the Eibishter. You know, we're like children, Shagolum al Shulchan Aviyem, because we've been exiled from your table at the Beis Hamikdash, but still the Eibishter continued to support us because we're Ktanim, because Kikot and Yaakov. Anyway, so Iboyelahu, so now the question becomes, is the halacha like Rav Ila, that takana is in fact in effect, or not? Or would we say that takana was never voted on and was never decided on? Or maybe we would say it creates a mitzvah but not a choiva. So what is it? So the Gemara says, Toshma, let's bring a proof. When such a case was brought to Rabbi Yehuda, you had a case where a man didn't want to support his children after they were 6 years old. Omalahu, so Rabbi Yehuda answered them with a popular expression, Yorud Yolda, the Yorud gives birth, the Yorud is some kind of animal, we'll talk about in a second, Vabnei Masa Shadia. And throws its children onto the people of the city to take care of. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, this guy is acting cruel like a yorud. So a yorud, Rashi translates as tanim, which is an animal, which is a creature mentioned in a number of places in Tanakh. From some places, it seems, in all the places where it's mentioned, the two characteristics of it are that it has a very mournful cry and that it's very cruel to its children. So, for example, in Megillas Eicha, we have the expression "gam tanim choltzu shad," that even the tanim, which is cruel to its children, will still stick out its breast for them to nurse. And the Medrash actually says on that the tanim, the Eidishtim made it, that it has like a covering over its face, that when its babies are young, it doesn't see them and it allows them to nurse. If it were to see them, it would eat them. So the tanim is some kind of cool creature. So based on that, that it has breasts and it nurses. No, so that's the verb. So one then we're not talking about tanim agdolim. That's something else. So one possibility is this creature is what's called in English a jackal. So it's an animal in the same family as dogs and wolves and whatever. So that's one possibility. There are some places in Shas where Rashi defines it as some kind of bird. And we find, in fact, there are places in Psukim where it mentions it in connection with Bnos Yana, which are ostriches. So the implication would be that it's some kind of bird that tends to hang out with ostriches. So maybe what it is maybe there are actually two different creatures that bear that name. Whatever the case, the Aramaic word for the creature is Yorub. So now Rabbi Yehuda is saying, look at this guy. He's acting as cruel as a yorud to his children, that just like the yorud bears its children and like wants to have nothing to do with them, the same way this guy is acting like the yorud and he's throwing his children on the tzibur to take care of them. The point being that Rabbi Yehuda is not saying, well, we're the beis din, let's force him to do what he needs to do. He's just saying we need to put pressure on him. That shows that maybe the takonas usha does not apply. Otherwise, he would be required to. And he have also a kamed of chista. Similarly, when such a case was brought to Rav Chista, Amalahu, he told the people, kofulei asisa b'tzibura, take a mortar, which is a large container that they use for grinding things, turn it upside down in the tzibur, in the marketplace, the lekum, and let him stand the lema and make the following announcement. Over boy bunny, even the raven looks after its children. Vahu gabrile boy bunny, and that person does not want to look after his children. So again, like we put social pressure on him, but we don't force him to do the right thing.
Who goes
on
that stone?
So who goes on it? So Rashi brings two explanations. One is that we make the man himself, he himself, who doesn't want to support his children, based and makes him stand up on this upside down mortar and make this announcement about that I myself am worse than the Erev. And that way, maybe the point is that the guy will be humiliated enough that he'll say, you know what, I'll go ahead, I'll do it. The other possibility, Rashi says, is we send the Shliach Tzibur. Based and would send a messenger to make that announcement and name the guy by name. Why it is that they use a mortar, Davka, why not, for example, just bring a bench to there and let him stand on that? It's a different Rishonim and Achronim have various explanations. And if the Ritva says it symbolizes the idea, a mortar you use to grind up grain for food. So therefore it symbolizes the idea that his parnasa ought to be turned over. If he's not supporting his children anyway, what does he need parnasa for? So therefore it should be turned over and he shouldn't have the ability for it anymore. The Maharal talks about that the Bechlal represents the idea like he's acting backwards. So therefore we use a backwards upside down keli for him to stand on. Ben Yehoyada points out that also the mortar can symbolize his wife. The wife is a keli to the husband, like the way the mortar is a keli for what you put it in and grind up. And therefore it symbolizes like we're saying in effect, what does such a person even need to have children for with his wife? He may as well not be married, or his wife may as well refuse him tashmish if he's anyway not even going to take care of his children. So you do that. So the Gemara asks, "Over boy barnea, you're telling me that the raven takes care of her children? We have the pasuk in Tillim. We say in davening, Livnei Erev Asher Yikro, that Hashem looks out for the children of the raven when they cry out. The implication being that the parents abandon them and they cry out to Hashem, and Hashem provides for them. And in fact, there's a medrash that says how Hashem does that. He causes that from their own waste, from their own dung, worms grow in it, as they tend to do in decaying things, and then the babies are able to eat those worms. So the point is that the Erev is cruel to its children and abandons them. And there are other places in Shas, in fact, where the raven is taka used as a metaphor for someone who abandons their children. So the answer is loikasha habachivri habachuchri. It depends whether we're talking about black or white ones. So Rashi says black and white means different stages of the growth of the babies. They start out white. And at that point, the parent ravens, who themselves are black, they figure these aren't our children or whatever, or they ignore them. Eventually, the children themselves grow black feathers. Then at that point, parents start taking care of them themselves. Before that, Hashem takes care of them directly through these worms, like we're saying. And after that, parents come and do it. Tosfos says, rather, we're talking about two different species of ravens. There are black ravens, and then there's a subspecies of raven that's white. So the black ones are the ones that ignore their children, and the white ones are the ones that our Gemara is saying do take care of their children. another example, he have osila kame de Rava, when such a case came to Rava, a man who doesn't want to support his children when they're past the age of six, omale, then Rava also wouldn't force him, but he would tell him, michalach de mitzini banecha mitzdaka, do you want your children to be supported out of tzedakah? And maybe that would shame the guy into saying, no, I'll support them. But the Gemara points out, v'layamonan elo d'lay omid. Now this, that we don't force the father to support them, is only if he's not rich. The word omid literally means, in Malashan oimed, which means estimate, if we don't estimate that he has the kind of money that he could support them in style. Aval omid, but if he is rich, kafin and layal korche, then we're koi for him, whether he likes it or not, because if nothing else, he has mitzvah tzedakah. And since tzedakah is first to your closer relatives, then therefore he has that responsibility. He heard the Rava Kafia that of Nassan Ba'ami, as we have an example where Rava one time Rava pressured Rav Nassan Ba'ami, Ba'apik Mene Dalad Meir Zuzi Litzdaka, and he extracted from him 400 Zuz for Tzedaka. This wasn't to take care of Rav Ami's own children. This was just for Rav Nassan Ba'ami, rather. This was just for the general Tzedaka fund of the city. But still, since Rav Nassan Ba'ami was rich, then and Rava knew he could afford it, then he pressured him into it. Tosfos points out, by the way, the Gemara elsewhere says that when you have a mitzvah where it says the schar of it right there in the pasuk, then you don't force a person. Here we have the mitzvah of tzedakah is in this week's parasha in parasha A, and the Torah tells us in the schar of the mitzvah of tzedakah, then Hashem will bless you. So therefore, a person, based on doesn't force a person to do that, because in effect, the person can say, you know what, so I won't do the mitzvah and I won't get the bracha. What do you want from me? So Tosfos gives a few different explanations over here. Number one, Akfe doesn't necessarily mean that he forced him, as in like he beat him or whatever. It could be that he convinced him verbally. Another possibility, Tosfos says, is they may have decided in the city that they assessed each person for how much tzedakah they're going to give. They know the tzedakah fund needs X amount of X number of dollars per week, and they figured out how much each person has to give, and therefore they have the ability to even force the people to pay up their share. The third possibility, Tosfos says, is that by tzedakah, it's not only a mitzvah saseh, you also have the loisah says, also in this week's parasha, loisah amitz, you shouldn't be stubborn, loisikbots, don't close your hand against the oni. So therefore, that could be the kind of thing that Rava, as the head of the Beis Din, could even force Rav Nassan Ba'ami to do it. Marsha, by the way, talks about over here, there seem to be different levels within this itself. What we were saying, telling the guy that he's worse than a raven and that he's worse than the tanim and whatever, is like a higher level of kfiya. Then you can have what Rava did to this guy who didn't want to support his children, which is even a lower level of kfiya. You're not even putting public social pressure on him. You're just telling him privately, one-on-one, you know, it's not right that you should leave your children to be supported by tzedakah. So you have different levels. By the way, it does mean, so these halachas are brought in Shulchan Aruch. One thing it does mention, though, the Bach says, and the Beis Shmuel brings it, la-halacha, if the children have their own independent income, let's say, for example, their mother left them money or whatever, then we don't force the father to support them. Then you know, they have what to be supported out of, so then we don't force him, we don't even pressure him, we don't use any of these tactics. Over here, we say they can just be supported out of what was left, out of the money that was left for them.
That wouldn't be long-term.
No, so not necessarily. You can have, for example, let's say she yaushin from her parents or whatever. You can have cases where she had independent income. You could even have, for example, let's say where she was divorced from her husband and then later on died and her children yaushined her. Whatever the case, you can have examples where they have money independent of him and then. Okay. So the Gemara says, since we're talking about a takana that was made in Usha that Rabbi Ila mentioned, so now the Gemara is going to mention some other takanas that Rabbi Ila says were made in Usha. But Usha hiskinu, they made a takona in Usha, a kosev called the chos of Levanov. If a person during his lifetime writes a document that gives all of his nechosim to his children, so in other words, he's saying, I'm not going to wait until I die, even while I'm alive, I'm writing a document that gives all my nechosim to them. Nevertheless, uva ishta nizonim behem, he and his wife can continue to be supported by that. This is a takona skacham. He asks, why do you even need a takana for that? G'dola mizu amru. The Chachamim said something even greater than that. You have a case. You can have a case. Suppose that a man dies, he leaves behind an almana and he leaves a daughter. Now the daughter, let's say, so he had no son, so the daughter yaushins his property. Now, what happens if that daughter gets married? So now, as usual, the property that she brings into the marriage becomes her chosin, nichsim logu, nichsitzon bazel, as the case may be. Usually, the rule is that midrabanan, the husband's position, as far as those nechosim, is like the position of a buyer. Now, usually, we consider as if he bought that property. Now, usually, the rule is that we have a takana, mipnei tikkun olam, that if a person sells property, you can't collect from it to support his widow or to support his daughters. When we're saying that there's tanoi ksuba, that his widow is to be supported until she passes away or collects her ksuba or remarries, and the daughters are to be supported until they're begeris or until they get married, then if he's previously sold property to other people, you can't take that property away from those people to satisfy that debt. Mipnei tikkun olam, because otherwise nobody's going to ever want to buy property from each other. Here we're saying that even though the husband is considered a lakeach, nevertheless, it can be taken away from him as necessary to support the widow or to support the widow. Because Rashi points out, he's not really a lakeach after all. He didn't spend money to get this property. It came as part of the wedding, as part of the nadin. Therefore, we can still require him to support his mother-in-law. So even then, we're saying that you can be supported. So in our case over here, where the guy voluntarily wrote away his nechosim to his children, do we need to say that he and his wife can be supported? Of course they could. And we know the Shalach Ravin Be'igrte, as we know that Ravin sent a message in a letter that Misha Mesvi Niach Amono Bas, if a man died and left an Amona and a daughter, and the daughter inherited his property, and later on she got married. So to begin with, before she gets married, Amonos in Nizonis Minachasav, the Amona gets supported out of the estate. And Nises Abbas, and even when the daughter gets married, Amonos in Izonis Minachasav, still the Amona continues to be supported, because we're saying even though the husband is a Lekeach, we still override his rights in favor of the Amona. We don't say that regular Takana that we don't take from a third party, we pay Tikkuna Olam, that doesn't apply over here, because as Rashi says, he didn't actually buy the property. And the Braisa continues, Mesa Abbas, or not the Braisa, Ravin continues and says, Mesa Abbas, what about if the daughter dies and her husband yarshins her? So, Amr of Yehuda ben Achoysesh or Rabbi Yosef Bechanina, Al Yodi Hayamaisis, Rabbi Yehuda, the nephew of Rabbi Yosef Bechanina, says, such a case happened with me. But Amru and the Chachamim said, Amonasin is Zonis Menachasim. Still, the Amona continues to be supported out of his Nechasim. We don't say at this point he has no relation at all. The only reason why he was in the picture of Bechlal was because he was married to the daughter, and now the daughter, his wife, is dead. And therefore, we should say he's considered like a third party Lekeach, and we shouldn't take away from him. No, we still take away from him to support the Amon. Same reason, right. But the point is it applies even after his wife dies, right. So why would we need Takonas Osha to say that in the case where it's not even a matter of Yerusha, it's a matter of that he voluntarily gave away all of his Nechosim, that he and his wife should continue to be able to support it from them? What's the Chiddush? And the answer is, Ma'u Detema, without Rabbi Ila telling us about the Takonas Osha, you would have thought, because the difference is over there, in the case of the Amona, there's nobody who's able to work on her behalf. She's an Amona, she doesn't have a husband. So we have Rachmanos on her, and we say, she can continue to collect from the estate even after it was Yarshin by her son-in-law. Abel Hofa, but over here, when you're talking about himself and his wife, the old couple, where he gave away his property, Nitrach Lidide or Lidida, so fine, let him go to work and support himself and his wife. Kamash Mulan, and therefore the Takonas Usha tells us not so, that he's still entitled to support out of that estate, because we assume that when he gave it away, he didn't mean to give it away so much that he and his wife can't be supported. Okay, so now the question is, again, the question is, Rabbi Ila is saying that this takana was made in Usha. Is the halacha like that or not? Does he have that right or not? So the Gemara says, Toshma, we can prove from the following story. One time Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Yonasan were standing together. Also, who Gavra, a certain person came over, Gochin, and he bent over and he kissed Rabbi Yochanan's feet. So, like, obviously, Rabbi Yonasan had done some tremendous favor for him. Omelet of Chanina, my high. So, Chanina says, what did you do for this guy? Amalei, so he says, Hai Kosev Nechosev Levonahu. This guy was in this situation. He had written a document giving all of his Nechosim to his sons. Va'asi Sinu Lezonei. And I was Kofer them. I forced them to support him. So Rashi says, Bechozga means strongly. Tosfos again says that maybe it doesn't mean that he actually forced them with the power based in. It just means that he verbally convinced them. Anyway, so the Gemara says, so obviously, so I amit b'shlema lavdina, if you say that the halacha is not like Rab Ila, that this is not a takonas usha, it was never voted on, or the chachamim thought about, or whatever the point is, mishumachi asiyinu, then that would explain why Rab Chanina still, why Rab Yonason pressured them into doing it, and therefore this guy is so grateful that I went for him lefnim meshuras hadin. Eli amit dina. But if you say that it's mitzad din that they're required to support him, asiyinu boy, would he need to be? Would he need to be ma'asa them? What he should be doing is he should be telling them, listen, this is the halacha. You better follow it, whether you like it or not. And if not, then the hammer will come down on you. So the fact that he doesn't do that, the fact that he only says that he only did it behind the scenes shows, therefore, that the halacha is not like that. The halacha is technically it all belongs to the children. And if they want to support him, it's out of the goodness of their heart. So therefore, what Rabbi Yonason did in this case is he convinced them to do that, to continue supporting their father, to continue supporting their parents, even though they're not strictly required to up the halacha. So showing, in other words, the halacha is not like this takana sosha. And we'll continue tomorrow in the Gemara Be'ez Hashem with talking about other takanas of Usha, including one very famous one as far as tzedakah. Yeah.